But let's go ahead and start more from the bottom.
I didn't realize that you didn't.
And work our way up, because that's where the changes are. So you see where I have highlighted, where I have Steve Faulkner, mm-hmm. Facilities Operations and Maintenance Manager. Now, it's very similar to the job he held before he was promoted to Facilities Management Manager. As a matter of fact, it's the same words. And I changed them around so we wouldn't get confused. But in Steve hired on and was held a position of Maintenance Operations Manager. He hired on in 16, I believe it was, 2016. And then at the end of 17, beginning of 18, after Tim Winter left, the director of that department, Steve was promoted up to the new position of Facilities Maintenance Manager. So since I changed the role a little bit from Facilities, Maintenance Operations Manager, to what the new job would be, I just called it Operations and Maintenance Manager. So, and then I just sent out to you all some updated stuff. I mean, just sent it out via email, but I've got some hard copies we can go over. But so one of the primary differences where I have Steve from what his job when he hired in to what I'm proposing now, that one of the biggest differences is that in that job, he had the custodians reporting to him under Maintenance Operations Manager in that role. When he was promoted up to Facilities Management Manager, which is really looking at the position, it's Assistant Public Works Director. That's kind of the role he holds now. He has everything that's shown here. When you're looking at this chart,
TBD is what Steve used to be.
Yeah. Well, is what he is now.
Or, yeah. I'm sorry.
But not at that level, not at that capabilities. To be quite honest with you, when I had a talk with Steve last week, I told him that he's not really doing the job as I see it that he's assigned to. I'm dealing more with the development and the public aspect of the fairgrounds, and he's really focused in on the maintenance of the fairgrounds. He's not really managing or directing what's happening at the fairgrounds. And that causes confusion to Jill as well, because he'll work with her on some things, and I'll work with her on most things, and that's confusing to her. Custodial services, we've had quite a few challenges. Personal challenges in there. I think they're better now than when I came. They're not ideal, but I think it's better. I think Dan can probably.
That was bad before you got here, so yeah.
Of course, in fairness, we hear from Kevin out at the airport that's one of the toughest jobs that he has to fill.
Yeah, it's definitely a hard job to fill, and it's and really in the whole maintenance, whether it be the custodial, whether it be the building and plant maintenance. That's where we have our biggest challenges, with workers' comp and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You know, so we have quite a few hours, let's say, a year in that. And once again, even on the custodial services, Steve is addressing it from the surface. He's not going deep down into it. And even when you look at his PDQ, the position description questionnaire, and you look at his primary, and I pointed this, and we discussed it, he's not going to argue with it, but his focus and his passion is in facilities maintenance, mm-hmm. and he's good at that. He's good at writing RFP, RFQs. He understands what it takes to go from concept to completion. This other stuff here is really beyond his capabilities. I mean, I'm not saying, I don't mean it derogatory, but his focus and his background is really facilities maintenance and construction. And so when we're looking at this chart here, everything to the left was a department, and that's what other road and bridges. So everything from Kathy W. on over, which is looking at a backwards road and bridge, we program technical services. That's what Janet and other people oversaw. And then, except when you take out purchasing on the right side, that's what another department director oversaw. And it is pretty time consuming. I didn't think it was going to be that time consuming when I first came, and I thought it would kind of mellow out. But it's a good 35 to 40% of my time dealing with the facilities management side. And so a question I had early on was, does that mean that the former road and bridge director was only 60% busy? And I don't find that at all. Now, I have shifted quite a few, well, major duties over to Mike and Gio that other directors had done. Mike played a bigger role in developing the budget this past year. But I need to take a bigger role in that because when I came in, you know, it cost me a lot of time and a lot of corrections and stuff, and it's just really trying to get my hands around everything. 2020, I think, will be a lot smoother, especially if we can do something with the organization. So anyway, when we're looking at Steve in a position that he was in, a position that I'm, and I put his name in there so we would know whether he stays, because an important thing to look at here is the wages. He got, and you all have not seen this, and I got updated figures from Kathy, is when he went from maintenance operations manager to facilities manager, he got about an 18 point some percent increase. And so when we look at the top one here, maintenance operations manager, had Steve stayed in that role where he'd be today, assuming everything went as it had gone, he would be at step 9, and that's what he'd be making. Mm-hmm. It's just right around 78. As facilities management manager, where he is today, 2020, he's at step 8, and that's what he's making there. And then the other one, we can talk about the assistant public works director later. And so the conversation I had with him was, I told him the best that can happen would be, he goes into this role, the best that can happen is he stays at his current salary with no cut and he's frozen. But that, I have a hard time justifying keeping him there. I honestly think it'd have to be a cut. But the flip side is, okay, look at what you've been doing for the last 2 years, and you got quite a bump for not doing much more than beyond what you were doing anyway. So it's kind of like a correction in the market. Instead of being on that steady curve to where I feel it should be at just about 78,000, he actually had a nice bump in wages, and then he probably ought to come back to where the position. And in speaking with Kathy, and in looking at the job descriptions, and when you look at that, to me, what I'm proposing him to do and what he was doing are similar enough to where I think the pay range for operations and maintenance manager could remain the same as what we're looking at here for the maintenance and operations manager. When we look at...
So the maintenance operation manager is quite a bit higher than the public works assistant director if he's going to stay with that title. That makes sense.
Where he was and where I'm proposing this.
No, I'm talking about Mike.
Oh, you mean if Steve were to move up into this role?
No, whoever.
Yeah. It's
so Mike is quite a bit higher than what even Steve's making now.
Yeah.
So I think you've done a good enough job of helping us understand what needs to happen with wages, and at least for this part of the organizational chart, where you have Steve, I agree that you have him in a place that he is fully qualified for and can do an outstanding job, and that's in this particular organizational chart, that's the right place for him. And I've been a big supporter of Steve's all along, but I recognize what you're talking about organizationally, what works best in that area. And I do believe that that facilities operation and maintenance manager with the concentration on just exactly how our buildings are being built and maintained over time is a necessary job, and I think it deserves to be a standalone job the way you have it. But the wage is what the wage is.
Right.
And I also remember, I think it was during our budget process, we talked a little bit about the need to have someone who, I mean, I think you used the word term turning wrenches, you know, who's really able to be a little more hands-on on that facilities maintenance portion, and that's been lacking a little bit.
Yeah. When, in speaking with Steve, when he was in his former position as maintenance operations manager, he said he spent about 50% of his time in the field doing work. And that's what I view now. When I came to you all during the budget, I was pretty focused on just trying to get caught up on maintenance work, and that's why I was proposing at that point leaving Steve where he was and then having a working supervisor. This is the same concept, but a step above, because
he ends up being the working supervisor.
And the way the job description would be structured, or whatever the title should be, because some people feel if you're called a manager, then you don't work. Well, it's really a supervision thing. What I mean is you don't get your hands dirty.
Yeah,
so,
too bad.
No, that's just if you're a director.
True, that is true. and then I had this similar structure, but I still had the facilities maintenance manager in what I'm now calling assistant public work director. But when I look at the work of either side of public works, it's about equal when you look at the work, you know, that needs to be done and the importance of the work. And so it wasn't until the night of the 15th when I was working on this that I said, you know, this, I probably ought to propose this to be an assistant director. And I guess I shied away from that because, you know, I guess I did find where you have some counties where you have two deputy county managers. It's not totally uncommon to have two assistant directors and stuff like that. It would be the first in this county, in this department. But to me, there is a left and a right side to our department.
We've just talked about the right side. Are you ready to talk about the left side also?
Sure.
Okay. What's the current structure? Is Road and Bridge Operations under Mike Morty currently?
No, the way you see
it's
it
like
here,
this now.
It's like this now.
Okay.
I added the term technical services
right.
to fit all that stuff under it.
Okay.
And I think Janet may have developed this structure somewhat. I think maybe the WEED program. Now, once again, I've been a lot for my own to accelerate my own education in the department. I've been doing stuff that really Mike should have been doing, that Steve should have been doing. But it's if I do it, then I'm going to learn faster. So there was. You know, on paper, Greg was working for Mike. In reality, Greg was working for me. He dealt with me more. Although Mike did help Greg substantially with the budget and stuff like that. And then one reason why I felt comfortable having Mike basically do the budget, and Janet was the main driver of the budget when she was here. One reason why I felt comfortable with, well, last year was really the first time I was here for the budget. I came when the budget was handed to me in 18, and so 19, developing 20's budget was the first time I was in on that.
You're saying the 2020 is the first year that the budget is
it was new from start to finish. And the reason I felt comfortable with that, because Mike actually had done the budget the two previous years, because with Janet leaving, Janet had started the budget, so she left in June of 16, so Mike did the 17 budget, 18 budget, and then a substantial part of it for the 19 budget. So he knew the method. I mean, even the PowerPoint presentation was the same one that he used. So it's really time for me to do what a director should do and drive a larger part of the direction and look at some more efficiencies within a department and clearly in the road and bridge operations side. Well, the two main areas that I'll say three, because when I look at what's happening in the building and plant side with possible DHS and whatnot, that's huge. And so I think a difficult thing is going to be finding the person that I have the vision for the assistant director on the facilities management side.
Did we include that FTE in the 2020 budget?
Yeah, we included
the FTE.
I don't think we funded it at this level.
But not at this level.
Okay.
In that email that I sent out on the 17th, between the facilities management manager, which is 90,000 where Steve is now, and then the 85,000 that's in the budget for that supervisor position, that's 175,000. Well, okay, so we take Steve down to 78. Let's just say you're still working with 98,000 or so.
You're getting close.
Yeah.
And I drug my feet long enough to where the person's not going to be here for the full year. So for the, and like I think it's kind of a shell game, kind of a shuffle game. But at least for the 2020 budget, when we look at the overall what's budgeted, we'll be okay. But going forward, it would be a higher
increase
than I had indicated it would be.
So who's accounting to who, and who's doing performance reviews in all these
cases? I'll tell you who's supposed to be doing them, and then I'll tell you that they're not getting done. But so I definitely working with Mike and Gio and Greg is we do the administrative assistant for on that side, and then working with Steve do the one for Jim. So I have these people, and one reason why I have these people reporting directly to me is because there's so much overlap in these.
And I'm fine with that. So
I would do those, and then I do the assistant directors.
Right.
I do those. And then Mike would do the technical services and the weed program. Oh, and I also do the road and bridge ones, the foreman. And then Mike would do the technical services
that line goes to you.
Weeds.
Yep.
And then the assistant director on the facilities management side would do Jill, Steve's, and then the custodians.
So you have seven direct reports in this scenario.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yep.
So then, back to my kind of question a little bit ago. So, are these going to be the same, or are these two, the assistant directors, are they going to be the same, or are we going to be able to separate them and keep them, as in difference in wage amounts and the rest? Are we going to separately model those and do surveys, because that always creates inopportune.
Well, to me, if they wouldn't
unless
be identical, they would be, and I'm not familiar with how
benchmarked somehow.
Other directors within assistant directors are within the county, other departments. There are a few other assistant directors. I don't know if they're all the same or if some of them are different.
They could be different. I mean, these are going to have two very different job descriptions.
And I'm not saying you should or shouldn't.
But we need to talk about it.
The
assistant public works director of Road and Bridge, which you've got Mike's name penciled in there, is going to be a licensed engineer, correct?
Right.
And this other individual, the assistant public works director of facilities management, is not necessarily going to need that kind of educational requirement.
Right.
Or even the same kind of experience.
And I think it's...
So they could have...
Yeah.
They could end up having different wage scales.
Yeah, I saw this, and I did have a question about whether the facilities management... director, if it made sense for that person to have a degree in engineering. The other, construction management, facilities management made sense to me, and I wasn't sure about, just because you're an engineer, would that provide the right background?
So somewhere we need some supervisors.
We need
skills
too.
So really the only change, there's two changes on this one stated today. That's different from the one I sent out on the 17th. Is one, there's these asterisks. It's under the road and bridge direction, so the left side. So in the education, training, and experience level, and I think it falls under certification and stuff, but the first asterisk in that little blank block would be that we specify that it's a professional engineer because of the bridge work and that type of stuff. And so when we look at the differences, and then the other difference I did is a bachelor's degree, and before I just had civil engineering, I said mechanical engineering, or civil engineering, construction management, facilities management, or related field. And then, of course, at the bottom of that, it always says a combination of education, training, experience, which provides the knowledge, you know, could satisfy that. There's a lot of good people out there. I mean, what I've always said about the degree is it shows that you set a goal and you accomplished it. And there's a lot of people that don't work within their degrees. I'm a mining engineer. But it was a lot of mechanical and civil type work.
Forgive my ignorance on this, but when you get a degree in civil engineering, is it a bachelor's degree? Isn't that or an advanced degree? My recollection was that it used to be to get a degree in civil engineering was a 5-year program in most universities as opposed to a 4-year.
No. Well, where I went, it was.
No, not true.
It's not true. Yeah, when I went, actually, mining had more credit requirements than what civil had.
Okay.
When I was
once you get the degree, you have to work under an engineer for you to be.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. There is some certificates.
When you get your PE license, you get it in your discipline. You know, I mean, yeah, I'm a PE, and if I stamp anything on the civil side, I have to prove that I have that capability.
Yeah, there's a certain certificate for civil engineering, right?
Yeah.
This was
and so when we're going down through, and then the other thing, you see a little asterisk there at the top on the road and bridge side, and then down in that blank block there, those are things that when I look just need, rather than just assist, it needs to be a little more where it's like direct, do.
Yeah, they need to be, I mean, if they're going to supervise those people, they need to have those responsibilities,
exactly.
Right?
And I think it's more required now with a larger department and the demands. But when you go down through, there's a lot of things that are basically the same. And then when you get to the third page, you'll see where there's specific stuff that, of course, that the facilities management assistant director wouldn't do. Pretty much anything outside bridges, roads, that kind of stuff doesn't apply. But then again, there is the whole side of the county facilities. I mean, we're really getting deeply involved in the design and project management of builds. And I don't really know, if we look, I don't think any of us can say 10 years out how many buildings we'll build between now and 10 years.
One.
And that may be
maybe.
If they can find the money to do it.
So I think that's a. To me, they're pretty similar jobs, although the educational requirements I think are higher on the road and bridge side.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm fine with that too, Ray. I'm just asking the question.
Yeah.
Because there's no assumption right now that you're backing that up. That these may not necessarily have same job or same pay range.
Yeah.
So what's the education level that you want for the facilities manager?
Well, what I've got.
Bachelor's degree mechanical.
Yeah, mechanical.
A bachelor's degree in mechanical or civil, construction management, facilities management, or related field. And then I'd like to see somebody's got some additional training in facilities maintenance and energy efficiencies, that type of stuff.
But at the end of the day, just like you say, you've got this box at the bottom there, right, which basically means you can hire the right person even if they don't necessarily have that degree of education.
So, but by my read of this, the right-hand side, the facilities management assistant director, needs a higher level of experience. I mean, because you've written 5 years versus 3 years, and you have 5 years in 1, 2, 3 different things, and then you have additional training on top of their bachelor's degree. I mean, just a quick read of this, it looks like there'd be an argument for that person being paid more.
Which especially if you had 20 years of experience on top of the degree.
Right, which isn't exactly what I thought we were just having a conversation about. I mean, my just instinct, it sounds like, you know, the technical expertise of our road and bridge assistant director needs to be higher because of that
and so,
engineering and design piece. So it probably needs to be written in a way where
that's
the case.
What I did,
I don't know.
You don't think necessarily?
I don't know. Necessarily. So you think about what they're going to be doing in the building facility. I mean, they could be, you know.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's a question. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I don't know.
I wouldn't expect them to draw up plans. I would expect them to be able to review plans, you know, from a contracted, you know, facilities. I mean, that's my idea.
What I didn't have presented here, but what I've got in my files is I've got current and then I've got desire. And so what I didn't do, I didn't give you my desire. So this left-hand column is what exists today.
Mm-hmm.
And in reality, with 3 years of work-related training, you can't have a PE. You have to have four. So that,
right.
That's just the way this is. So the left-hand is kind of the way things are written. Well, not kind of. It's the way things are written right out of job description.
Right.
You can have your engineering training, which I FTE, what do they call it? Fundamentals of Engineering, I guess, FE. You can have that, and then after 4 years of experience working under a PE and with a sign-off, then you can take your PE.
So I'd like to support a little bit of what Beth just said. It really feels like on this left-hand side with Mike, that is a lot of technical expertise, a real true honest-to-goodness engineer that really knows how to build bridges, basically, and make sure
he doesn't do that.
Well,
we have them designed by somebody else.
Yeah, but he applies a whole lot of oversight.
So
why
is not then the other guy going to do the same thing when we get ready to build a building? We need to have the conversation.
Well, right, that's where I don't know. I just feel like the guy on the right hand side.
We're asking to get somebody more than Steve. We're trying to get somebody.
But what we're really looking for is someone that's a real manager, and they have three really distinct things that they need to manage without necessarily being an expert in any one of them. Whereas on the left-hand side, we really need an expert in how roads and bridges get built, even if he's not actually the one designing and building them. I mean, I kind of feel like if you stipulate that the facilities operation and maintenance manager has, if that job really has the level of expertise that Steve has in building buildings, then the person up above him doesn't really need to have that same level of expertise.
Well, I mean, look at me. I mean, I think I managed Steve pretty well. In my career, I've been involved with a lot of building construction and building design, but I can't get out there and fix HVAC system. I could design the ductwork, I could design what size unit you need, but I can't fix it if it breaks.
But do we want this person, this is just a legitimate question, do we want this facilities management assistant director to be able to do that kind of design work? Because to me, that's maybe the distinction here, is are they just managing these other people, or do we need them to be able to do that level?
They have to have at least a level of competency
to reveal
where they truly understand what it is.
What's being designed by somebody.
What's being designed and what needs done. They don't necessarily need to be able to program a control board, but they need to understand what a SCADA system is, what all this other stuff is, and when a board's done, or when they talk about, hey, you know, a damper, just anything. But understand what HVAC is. You know, really understand and understand the principles of a building.
So it's a question of a level of understanding.
Right.
So I guess the way this is written, like Tim said, I mean, I would assume these 5 years, 5 years, 5 years, 5 years would be overlapping with each other, but still, if this is written as the minimum, this sounds like a much higher paid position than what we're currently doing for assistant director. So maybe it's just a matter of it needs to say or somewhere.
How this could read is 5 years, and then the narrative, everything else underneath.
it could. And so maybe that's just a matter of how it's written. Yeah. And maybe this is something for HR to help kind of.
So we're already blown the budget way out already.
I know.
By
I know.
What we put in the budget and what we're now talking about, because now you're talking right. That, and again.
$100,000 a year.
And that's why I asked when we started this thing, is this going to be in the same comparable level as the Public Works
right.
Assistant Director on the road and bridge?
So, you know, this. I mean, this comes back. One of the places that Steve really was beneficial to the county was in the CLEF process, because during that CLEF process, he had plenty of experience building buildings and really understood that entire process. As long as we have that, and so thinking ahead, let's say we're building a human services building 2 years from now. Mm-hmm. If you have
so we don't need to hire a construction manager next time.
Well, that's
that would be my
that's
idea.
Another conversation. But if we have Steve or an individual comparable to Steve in this facilities operation and managing maintenance manager position, then the guy that's supervising him doesn't need to have the same level
right.
of mean, experience and expertise.
Very few managers can do what their workers do.
Right.
But Steve didn't get any of his jobs done because he was doing what he was working on the CLEF and not getting what was done.
Right, right. I mean, so we have to have somebody in the assistant job that can do a lot of what Steve's been doing, okay? So
organizing the flow of work and scheduling. We still haven't got a schedule out of you guys yet either on the building.
We're scheduled to come before you.
Okay, good. I'm just reminding you.
I think on the 24th of February.
Okay.
Well, we'll be back.
We can't
we'll be
wait.
Back. We'll be back. Okay. We've got it right already.
No, we can't. We literally can wait. I was.
Oh, I
was
thought you
speaking.
Said you can't wait.
I said we can't. Oh, okay. I was, but I was being metaphorical. Oh, God. Yeah, we're very excited for that conversation.
I guess what I'm.
It's okay.
I guess what I'm advocating for right now, and I'm happy to be disputed, is that this the guy on the right hand side, the TBD, I feel like could be somebody that doesn't have the same level of expertise as Mike Morning, and somebody that could even conceivably be paid a little bit less.
Well, I don't know as I agree at this point.
If you don't agree, that means you disagree.
Yeah. I'm trying to be political.
That's fine.
But don't be political. We're trying to get this done.
I honestly think that we really need somebody that, I mean, we got to understand that there's all these different levels and different types of engineers. People often think of engineers as just building type engineers, the civil engineers that build roads and build bridges and all this stuff. Civil engineers, as we remember, they build buildings, you know. That's who builds buildings, is civil engineers.
So let me interrupt.
I'm failing to understand why we would need an engineer in this position.
Need an engineer, but they do offer construction management.
So
I just want to make sure that somebody's got a technical know-how. And it's not a foregone conclusion because
how about a degree in construction management?
Yeah,
that
which
would be enough, especially when I look at the sky. Because I look at the thing out in the right custodial.
Or you know, we could put or training. You know, put a degree in this or training. You know.
So right, let me take you back to your thing here.
Sure.
The TBD guy on the right hand side is the custodial services. Forgive me. I mean, this just does not need a lot of technical expertise. This is a
It needs supervision.
It just needs basic human supervision. And honestly, fair and fairgrounds on the left-hand side, it falls under the same heading as far as I'm concerned. I mean, really, how much technical expertise do you need to interpret the Fair Master Plan and make sure we're doing what we're supposed to be doing out there? So the only real question is the importance of these skills that you're talking about is running down the middle here. Mm-hmm. And if you've got someone like Steve,
you just need to manage him.
You just, I just feel like this is a management role, not a technical role.
I would agree with that.
You know, if I may, I think the experience that we've had here is that the value in somebody that has a higher technical skill and maybe even a degree is if we do have a lot of building projects, new building projects, where we need somebody to be able to monitor and watch what the engineering, what is being designed, and then what is being built through that project, and so understand systems. But that's only if we have a lot of buildings that were built.
Yeah, and then in the meantime, we're involved in all that too, and so is the road bridge director. Yeah, but,
well, and so it's Steve, right?
So Steve. Well, the point I want to make is building on what Doug said a little bit. Steve was doing all this stuff, so he wouldn't get this other stuff done. And so I don't want Steve to necessarily have to be the main person on the DHS, okay? I want somebody that can help write that contract and all that other stuff.
And Steve could provide some advice to that person. Right. He wouldn't necessarily be responsible for it.
I just wanted to make sure.
No, I totally get that. But also look back, when we hire these people that are really technically proficient engineers, they turn out typically to not be such great managers. And what's been...
Except you, Ray.
And on this right-hand side, the issue has not been.
Yeah.
We have not been lacking in technical expertise. We've had all we've needed all along, from Tim Winter right on through to today. What we've been lacking is the management side.
We didn't need Tim Winter's engineering degree either.
That's my opinion, too.
We didn't need that.
Right. For what he was doing.
Yeah.
I guess I wonder, I mean, I don't mean this as an insult, but if maybe you have a bias toward people who are engineers, I mean, which is natural. I mean, that we think.
Well, even Alan Lind, I mean, Alan sits up here in this place right here,
and
then Steve Hoots works for him. And Steve Faulkner's place.
Alan didn't have the first idea how to put one brick on top of another.
But that he didn't.
And he did a perfectly great job of representing the city in that process.
You seem like you're getting the gist of what we're talking about here, right?
I definitely do.
Okay.
So
there's nothing wrong. The structure is great. I think all we're arguing about is what are we really looking for in that TBD.
Right. And so what I hope to walk away with today is your all's thoughts. And then I get with Kathy, and then let's fine-tune this, because I could have spent another 2 months trying to get to where I thought you all wanted, and I would never get it.
So we're looking pretty good on the right, generally speaking. We're looking pretty good on the left. I guess the
top
other,
middle.
Let's get rid of
this guy.
Running down the middle here, it is interesting that you've got all of these road and district foremen reporting directly to you.
I think that's the way it should stay myself.
I'm saying it's interesting, but
one,
I ask
one thing that. I had was left and right, and then everybody report. Everybody on that side reports to Mike, everybody on this side reports to TBD, and then come to me, and I was just thinking that,
we just add another layer if we just add Mike being here running, reporting, having the three district
managers. No, we just need another FTE.
Like I was here.
Oh, no.
No. Right there, another FTE.
So the one thing that...
Do you want to do it?
No.
Okay.
So Mike does direct a lot of the work. Matter of fact, Geo does direct a lot of the work of the road and bridge
projects.
With your authorization.
Yeah. And so,
through you.
And probably Mike even more so. And not to try to clutter this thing up too much, one thing Tom and I talked about was a dashed line that goes from Mike over to the road and bridge.
Okay.
Because he does.
That was going to be my question. You're not going to cut Mike out of that.
Oh, Mike is where Mike is. But like I say, the structure to the left right now, that's the way it is now. It's just those guys report directly to me. I think
for right now that they need to stay that way.
That.
Yeah, I think.
Because there is more of the administrative type stuff that I'm putting on Mike. I'm going to have to put on Mike more so than what he's done in the past, and from what I see, it can fit his schedule.
This seems like a good. I mean, this seems like it makes sense. I think the only question is just what level.
Yeah, and I got
what
no
this
problem
job should
with
look
I'm not
like
necessarily it. Biased to engineers. It's just that
that wasn't an insult. Yeah. I promise.
No, I mean there are a lot of engineers that. I'd rather have this frog than a. A talking frog.
So just a couple, and again, I think we're all on board with the TBD and the concept. And again, I'm all right with the concept of having the discussion about the pay ranges, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be real easy to say, well, they're at equal pay ranges and be done with it.
Yeah.
And then justify the pay by the job description. But if, and again, it depends on what, I mean, if we already know what this one is, the road and bridge part of it, so.
Let me do some deeper research and talk.
Yeah.
And then
we either say that, yeah, they're similar.
I'll get back on here as soon as I can.
That sounds good.
Get the job descriptions to us,
yeah,
to me, and then you can do the wage and salaries comparison and bring that to the board.
Yeah.
But you've got direction here, I think.
Yeah.
I think you have what you need. Maybe if there's some research to be done on similar job descriptions other places, or if there's, but I think identifying what the right level of education and experience is for that position based on what we need, not based on trying to make it equal to the other assistant director.
Okay.
Like, let's not over hire, you know?
Sure.
Totally.
Let's not over hire or under hire
right,
either one,
right.
Too.
Well,
people aren't happy when they're in a position where you've, you know, it's less than what they really are able to do, or it's more than.
Not always like that. But you're sure. You're extremely right. I'm actually reading exactly what I hope.
Yeah, the good news is we agree with the structure, and we're quibbling with the details about one of the individuals.
Right. But there was no way I could have all the details because I could present it to myself in 2 weeks.
You know, my instinct is, in this economy, if you advertise this job in the $95,000 range, you probably have a good chance of finding some pretty decent people to fulfill that. You know, I don't think this needs to be paid the same as Mike. This.
So we didn't talk about this, and I think I know the answer to this question, but I just want to put it out there to make sure that you feel like this is the right structure regardless of the people, right? So,
right,
if Mike left, if Steve left, you still feel like this would be the right structure.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a...
Yes, we are.
There's likelihood Steve would leave.
Yeah. That's understandable.
Yeah. I think that from what he shared with me under Tim, that Steve has specifically said that Tim was grooming him to take his job, which is a director job. And the move that he got was facilities management manager. But in hindsight, I'm not sure that was the right move.
That's fair.
Like I say, he's got a skill set that I think is unmatched within the county. I think if anybody, because I don't know enough about Todd Carr's background, but Todd is on one level and Steve's on another level, and I don't know how much, I don't know what Todd's background is, it's going to be hard if Steve leaves to replace him, but everybody.
No one's irreplaceable.
None of us are.
Tim's favorite saying.
Yeah. Well, and you know, he might find a better job, and what he can do better anyhow. So
yeah, I mean, we've had two good talks about this, and that'll be the hardest thing. I mean, but his quality of life, honestly, I think will improve. Being focused on what he's passionate about. And then
he might enjoy going back to turning a few wrenches everywhere.
And we're flexible.
I have to deal with the BS and the top side.
And we're flexible. And the other thing I share with him is that higher level position is exempt. You know, you don't get comp earned.
Yeah.
And share that. And typically we're going to be flexible enough in the county to where if he needs to work over these days, he can take off early there. And in a lot of jobs, you can't do that. So.
Especially when bicycle season comes around.
You have to have people in the right position.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, I think once that adjustment happens, he will. I think a lot of opinions of Steve will raise. I think he'll be an A player instead of a high C. You know?
Again, I don't want to be critical of as we move into next year. I want to see the jobs we get.
Yeah.
Put money toward, we want to see them all done, and otherwise, well, the hell would we even budget them for if they weren't worthy? So, and that's what we want to see out of
I would put
the department
this
and the rest.
Work if I didn't think it was really needed.
I agree.
Yeah, we appreciate the work.
Yep.
Yeah.
And again, I appreciate the thought that goes into it, too. So,
I don't have any other questions.
Okay. Well, the one thing I failed to put in the email that I sent on the 17th was that Tom was being blindsided with the attachments. He had not actually see this, and it was my fault. When I was ready to talk to him, he was off. And I'm like, dang, why did I wait?
You get blamed for me taking off.
So I guess I do have
a so hard on me. I need time off.
I guess this should go without saying. But the presumption is that with this new structure, with this additional FTE, you will have more time to provide more direct oversight to the three road and bridge directors, or district foreman, which is. I mean, that's why I appreciate when you said, yeah, no, you need to be in charge of those three guys. Well, that's important.
I don't want to add another level of government between us and Tom and Ray, and then down another level.
Well, not only that, if I was one of the road and bridge directors, I would want to report to you. I wouldn't want to be reporting to yet an intermediary. I would want to report to the guy that's really in charge.
Yeah.
Because something that, I mean, a big conversation that we're starting to have within Road and Bridge side is, okay, as this county grows, do we still maintain the same level of road service? Or really, are roads like 14 and 129 and other roads, really should they have an evening? How do you do that without spending more money? And one of the thoughts is, if we can find the gravel sources that can be permitted, and when we look at our cost right now to produce gravel in-house, although this is, I got to make sure it's all in. But
apples and apples.
Apples and apples. We're at about $8 a ton, and we're buying for 13 and 14. So you're looking at $5-6 a ton. How many tons are we using? So if we save the money not buying the gravel, we produce it. So now have we just paid for two plow operators for the evening shift?
Priority based budgeting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that's what it is, but that's not what I'm talking about.
Thanks for doing that.
So you know how
Jefferson County's handling priority based budgeting with their fairgrounds, right?
You
want to wag? Did you see the no. Oh my God.
Jefferson
County, they're just having a huge.
They
let out 48 jail people on Thursday, another 48 on Friday.
They lost.
No, they let them out.
Oh, because they didn't have any space for them.
No, they're $18 million short in their budget.
They tried to debrief this year, and they were not successful on the ballot, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah, no,
so
you're right.
That's why they're having to
debrief
on that.
Jeffco.
Yeah.
And so the famous Jefferson
County
rodeo grounds?
Yeah.
They're figuring out how to shut it down.
Oh, Donna's going to be really pissed. She stays down there.
Maybe she wants to buy it.
She stays down there all the time. She's the cheapest place she drives down there. Living quarters trip. They charge her like $18 a night to stay there.
Well, maybe they should charge a little more. It sounds like it's sucking their resources.
Is this the visual, separating the left?
That way I can read it.
No, he has to be able to put it through his printer.
My printer, yeah.
I am ready to just tell department heads, do not bring me a single other piece of paper. I'm so tired of getting things in my email, and then they bring a printed copy in here. It's so wasteful. And
yeah, I'm kind of that way, but I really enjoy the paper.
I know, but I feel like if I want a printed copy, I'll just print it.
Print.
I mean, if they print five copies, of course I'm going to take one, but, don't bring them to me.
Yeah, one of the best pieces of advice that I got coming up here that I failed completely on is not taking paper.
Don't hand me that piece of paper.
If somebody offers it to you, don't take it. It's I just don't feel like I can not take it when it's offered.
Well, it's already printed, right? Did I actually save a piece of paper if I don't take it? I don't know. I mean, I'm not blaming anyone individually. They're trying to be helpful, and they want to.
Are you the one wasting it when you throw it away?
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Good question. I
can't take that because I don't want to fetch it right away.
I recycle so much paper that's handed to me all the time. Hey, Doug, do you mind too?
Sure.
Hey, Doug.
Hey.
These ones are single sided.
Was it Libby that got public lands steering committee chairperson?
No.
Oh, good.
No, she's the.
She beat out Nancy for.
No, she's still the chair of Land Use and Natural Environment.
Oh, okay. Who was the chair of the public lands?
Larry Don was.
Oh, Larry Don, that's right.
And so he got reelected.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think there was any surprises anywhere with any elections. You know, that traveling committee, you got my email from that I sent to Hillary about the traveling committee.
Oh, yeah, thanks for that.
You all right with that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
I thought I hit it on the head.
Yeah.
And then the same goddamn thing, Roger Partridge being, you know, from Douglas County. Like, he needs help from us to send Douglas County to the Public Lands Committee.
Really? I just don't, you know, that whole thing has been built on this concept that we have to have that to get Pelt and secure rural schools. There's plenty of other ways we get it.
No.
The whole thing's a joke.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, when we send, I'm sorry, I like Darius, love Darius, and he's always been a great friend of mine, yeah, and the rest, but when they pay in $100 on public lands,
yeah,
and then, you know, he's gone every year as a junket, you know, it's like, really?
No. Just like you said, we get that kind of an issue that comes up, boom, we'll pay for one of us to go.
Yeah.
Kind of, because we were paying like $6,000-$7,000 bucks, weren't
yep.
we?
So, yeah.
It'd be better to go like when they do that, you know, like the Pelt fly-in. Well, yeah, let's go ahead and send somebody to go do that. I mean, but you know, the other thing of it is, you got to wonder. Everybody always freaks out about Pelt, and they think that you've got to do all this lobbying. Is it really that much at risk? I just don't know.
Especially right now, I don't think it is. You know,
would they really?
When Salazar got in and we got it fully funded, and it was right on the margin there. Yeah, it was, because, you know, yeah, it is probably at risk, because there's two-thirds of the state, you want to say, don't get any of it, so.
Yeah, but on the other hand, especially in the Trump administration, can you imagine them pulling funding for a rural program to support rural counties? I mean, it seems unlikely. It seems to me like it would be more at risk under a liberal Democratic administration.
Exactly. Yeah, and saving the money for urban things, yeah, housing and. Yep.
Thank God we have Trump in there.
I don't like him there either. So
conversation
before
took
we
did,
before we got okay. 2 seconds here before yeah. Don Cook called me yesterday too, and so we met with Senator Rankin, and uh-huh. and Rankin then went to the Club 20 meeting, and they got to meet with the governor, and he's talking with the governor, and both the governor on board with this type of upcharge for renewables, some type of renewable surcharge, and Rankin's going to figure out running the bill, and the governor's on board with it. So,
and what are they going to do with the money?
Distribute it back to us hurting souls because of shutting down coal-fired
so
power plants.
So basically taxing the power generated?
No tax.
Or
let's say fee. No tax. Fee.
But just to offset the revenue loss.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To, you know,
make it more equitable.
Help you in the just transition, throw some money at that, and then throw some money at you know, these the Starving Communities Fund.
I forgot that I met with Will Tour was
uh-huh.
here, and I met with him whatever day that was. What day was that? What day was that? Friday? Thursday? I don't know. Last week sometime.
Last week.
Were you in town?
No, he was here,
oh.
I think, for that water and energy symposium that they have at the Grand every year. I think he was probably in town for that. But John Bristol had invited...
That was Thursday.
Yeah, me and Tom and Jason Lacey and
Gary
Suter. And so we met with him and just talked a little bit about what's going on. So I could share some of that if you guys want. But I mentioned to him that we need them to fund the Just Transition efforts, figure out how to fund it.
Or close it down. I mean, one or the other. You're not going to put
yeah,
any money
right.
towards
don't,
it.
Like,
you
just got, yeah,
don't,
one
you guys have got other stuff you could be working on, you know.
Right.
And don't make it look like we're solving your problems and you're not giving any money to solve that. Yeah.
Of course, you know what, though? Then what will really happen is they'll take a little bit of money and hire an administrator, and that won't really prove anything either. I mean,
because
well,
he doesn't,
all
have, he doesn't
right
have any money to do anything with either. So yeah.
yeah.
Right?
Well, and they haven't even hired anyone yet. They can't find anyone, as far as I know.
Who wants to take
the job? So the last thing I heard that, and speaking of that, who CCI's new director,
John
Swartout, told me that Noah, with used to be a Senator Bennett's office, is hunting it. So and so you guys,
he called me and I forgot to call him back. I'll call him tonight.
Noah's a good guy.
Noah's a really good guy.
That's who was looking to do it.
Yeah, he might be interested. And so that came down from John Swartout.
Got it. Did he call Ray?
I don't know about that.
He called me, but I'm not.
Oh, did Noah, you mean?
Nope, John called me. And he left a message and said, I have someone that I think would be really good, but actually I forgot to call him back.
Oh, okay, well, good. So,
I
told
Ray.
John to call you and talk to you about
okay,
it.
Okay, great.
So I probably would forget to pass
I just realized
message.
I forgot to call
Of course, I'm just quick to take a job in the Bennett administration.
When he gets when Bennett's president?
Yeah.
I will go on the record saying that I do not think that's going to happen.
Come on.
Did I tell you guys I took this new... Let me just say this. There was this New York Times quiz that was... I think I told Tom this. It was like 50 different people, and it was their faces, and you had to write their name and see if you recognized them. I knew a decent number.
Yeah.
I knew most of them. But they were... I mean, it was mostly like public...
Yeah.
A lot of... political people who I definitely knew who they were, and then a lot of like entertainers. But you know, there's also random like Instagram stars that like I'm way too old to know who these people are. Michael Bennett, dead last in the percentage of people that recognized him. It was really bad. I mean, and there was a lot of kind of random people in there, but. Dead last.
Well, that's kind of the way he was when he got to be appointed as the senator.
Yeah.
The replacement. He was about this unknown then.
I actually really like him as a senator. Yeah. I think he's great, but I don't know what he's doing.
So, in the interest of putting off the ED discussion a little bit longer,
I'm ready. So
I got to sit and talk with the first.
Dan, you're going to miss us.
Yeah. I got to sit and talk with the first gentleman for 15 minutes about wolves.
How does he feel about Wolves?
First gentleman.
Oh, it's pretty happy.
Polis's husband.
Oh, okay.
How does he feel?
It's out of my Catholic upbringing.
Well, he's very much in favor of wolf reintroduction,
oh,
but he understands that it's a complicated issue.
Oh,
nice guy.
Just like every political spouse, just say the right thing, right?
All right, let's talk PVB.
Yeah.
Okay, so last week we had ResourceX on site for a couple days doing a couple of things, and so wanted to kind of spend some time on that just to bring you up to speed, and since this whole effort was really or is part of the do we keep this system or not, and what is the use of it? Sort of try to bring you up to that speed as well. That there seems to be, I think Kendra was in there more than I was the last 2 days with them, but there seemed to be a good amount of participation from some department heads that hadn't as much participated before in honing their inventories. So we had 526 programs prior to this effort a month or so ago. And I think we're down to like 340-ish. And so, you know, our effort was to try to slim that list to something bigger generally in the sense of like the scope and size of the programs, but smaller in terms of the number of programs. And the other part of the effort was to try to use the sort of future-looking, and I don't remember the exact term that they use, but essentially thinking about the future of your program. So every program has a future. The idea of the exercise was, what are you doing now, and how might that program evolve? Whether it's an increase in service or decrease in service, a partnership opportunity, a grant or other funding opportunity, you know, some of those kinds of options, and really just tagging the programs with that label so that you would have a list of your 300 and whatever programs, And theoretically, each one will have or should have a label associated with it. It then allows you to run a diagnostic that says you have X number here, here, and here. And then that, I think, is the basis of a conversation that you all might have around, okay, well, let's look at, you know, when we talk about partnerships, let's talk about the partnership opportunities. Do we want to do pursue X, Y, or Z thing that is proposed by a department head? So that we did both things, one being slimming up our inventory, the other being this sort of list of possible actions. So there is a presentation that Resource X has created, which I'm not going to go all the way through, but I think there's some useful information in here.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I was impressed to see the sheriff come in and the assessor. I mean, I think that's great that they're actively choosing to participate in this process. And I guess I'm curious, without trying to throw anybody under the bus, but, you know, who is actively engaging and who is still kind of dragging their feet on this?
I would say that from active engagement, it's not as easy to tell at the superficial level of, like,
right.
You know, I think the sheriff hadn't participated yet to date and spent mm-hmm. most of the day on Friday with the Resource X people, and it seemed like he was actually, like, digging in on a lot of that. And got good
yeah.
So I think from that standpoint, I would definitely say he was...
So do we have any of his programs in there since he didn't participate?
I had created an inventory for him and then gone over and talked to him and Doug. So I think there were some in there that were accurate. Some probably needed to be cleaned up. And I think when he went back in on Friday and kind of cleaned it up more. And there were some other issues, I think, in terms of the back end, the accounting side of how we'd allocated costs to those programs. And he spent some time on that on Friday as well. So hopefully we were able to not just minimize the number and get more specific about the number of programs, but also get better costing numbers on some of them too, so the actual amount of dollars spent on X or Y thing should be more accurate.
So those two things said, and I'll interrupt you here while I'm here, but
yep.
You said two different things here. We're going to minimize the number of programs and get more specific. So how do you do that with those two objectives? Getting more specific to dump out 100 and 200 programs, you must have combined them with other programs.
We did, yeah. We had a lot of programs that were in there that were task-oriented, and so
not programs.
Not real programs per the definition of, you know, the bigger sum of work. There were tasks that would help you get that work done. And also getting that level of clarity around, you know, do we do this? Is it, you know, I guess to a level of, is it a valuable service to the community, et cetera, that we should be tracking? So there are a few things where we went, I think, too small in terms of, you know, combining too many things, and they were ResourceX was recommending we actually add a program back in. You know, for instance, I think the snowplow operation, we had put that under road maintenance, you know, because it was the thought of, you know, every time you touch the road is road maintenance, and so, you know, one big program. And they said, well, what if you want to know how much you spend on snowplow operations?
Right.
Probably a good thing to have a snowplow program. So we pulled
that
back
out. No, I think you need to have a snowplow program.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was just, that's the...
the refining.
Philosophy.
So you did a good job of answering half of Beth's question.
Who's dragging their feet?
Oh.
It's just helpful to know who the detractors on this are so we can kind of understand the context.
Or work around it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I would have said, honestly, I would have said elected officials, but based on Friday, it was less elected officials. Mm-hmm. I think we actually had participation across the board. I think so far the folks who hadn't seen Touch It, and maybe Kendra can throw other people under the bus, but...
I don't want to
it's a combination of I think, elected officials and frankly, appointed department heads that, you know, they just either the excuses if I didn't have time or whatever. I think it's seemed more about that than it was about, you know, not buying it or whatever you want to call the dragging feet thing. But I think, you know, hadn't seen the clerk's office, clerk and recorder's office participate much yet. And haven't necessarily gotten HR stuff fixed up. So I think those are the two that stand out to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if there are others that
I
see.
I have another question.
Were you getting from environmental health?
I'm not sure, but I think he was away for
who's at the town
conference, yeah, or meeting. So. Yeah.
I have another question. You said at the very beginning, you said every program has a future. So the presumption is there's none of these programs will ever be eliminated.
No, not necessarily. I think that's more about the let's look 3 to 5 years down the line and see how we might change it. So some of that future may involve taking funds and putting them elsewhere.
Okay.
And you'll actually see that, I think, a couple slides in
here. Yeah, because I was just
going to... A fate, maybe, is the
way. I just want to make sure that we're not stuck with 380 programs or whatever it is forever. That
right.
There wouldn't be the option to slim or expand, as the case may be.
And there are some things that we would like to slim that are maybe mandatory, statutory, et cetera, and so you're never going to slim them out of existence, but I think it is the ongoing conversation about right-sizing.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, we spent a lot of time talking about, like, what is a program, number one? It's not a task, you know? And then visualization, where is it going? So is this, you know, something that someone else is also providing? Why are we also providing it? Do we need to? If somebody else is doing it, can we cut it? And can that service still be fulfilled by somebody else? So there were quite a few programs mentioned that people were talking about, like, maybe we could cut this. Maybe we don't need it. And then on the other hand, too, like, oh, hey, here's a program. It's super important. We really need it. It's not recovering its own costs. How are we going to make that happen? How do we make it a better program?
And I think the only way we're going to make them better is if we talk about the programs. Mm-hmm. You know, if we talk about the work we're doing and think about how we can improve it. You know,
it seems like there's an inherent benefit in getting our department heads to think that way, just as a starting point, right?
Yeah. There were so many.
That's what I've said all along. Yeah. It's one of the values of this program.
So many instances where department heads are like, I've never even thought about this before.
And there were, you know, they were trying to facilitate that dialogue through the their exercises and some other things to lead into sort of task work on a computer. So what we've got here, this next slide, is in the course of the 2-day data, we've got 87 identified so far, 87 identified program changes. And so you can see across the top there, these are the sort of options that you had to select. It was kind of a pull down, and then you'd fill in a box with the detail of what your recommendation would be in the system. So when you pull up in the system, you pull up the program, and when you all would want to have a discussion about it, you'll see that the description, and then you'll have that note that's highlighted at the bottom, along with, you know, where it's recommended to change. And so this is one, a real one from our list, around address mapping as a partnership opportunity. You know, it's got in there, you know, how much time we spend and cost and all those things, and then kind of where it falls out in terms of the quartile and all that stuff. But it speaks to the idea of maybe we should, you know, partner with the towns in the area about, you know, how to find cost efficiencies preferably, I would assume.
That's pretty interesting to me that we have a department with 3 FTEs, and so we're only spending 3/10 of 3 FTEs on GIS address mapping. I'd be curious to see what they're spending the rest of their time doing.
They've got a pretty solid list.
Well, that's right there. That's kind of an aha to me. I would have thought that it would have been a much bigger
property work for the assessor's office.
Pardon?
Most of it's property work for the assessor's office.
Yeah, I would think that, you know, address mapping is going to link to, you know, construction activity and some of those kinds of things as well. So it shouldn't be taking a ton of time, I would think. But in any event, so this is another hour.
So how are we going to partner with the city when the cities don't have any money anyhow with Hayden, Oak Creek, and Yampa?
Well, that's where we get into the details later on. It's
an opportunity, but it doesn't mean it's one we can fulfill.
Well, and I think it's that the goal is for our staff to think about those options and then for them to bring those forward, and that's the basis of essentially like a departmental strategic plan kind of concept where you all are giving them some advice or counsel on, we don't want you to spend time on that, or this fulfills a goal maybe around partnership, saving costs, et cetera. And so they can bring those forward and you know, you either pursue it or you don't. But I think the devil will be in the details. This system isn't meant to capture all the detail. It's meant to capture and flag the opportunity. So this one's a real one as well.
This is real?
Decrease, yeah. We have a graffiti removal program, and they were recommending it be eliminated because it really doesn't do anything. I think there's like, I don't see the number on here. I thought it was $10,000.
Says we're spending $83,000 a year.
Yeah, I don't think that's...
Well, it's almost a whole FTE is what it says.
That can't be right. That's got to be a mistake.
Yeah, I think the accounting on that is wrong, but in essence, the discussion on it in the meeting was that we spend like 10 grand a year and it doesn't get spent.
I'm telling you, this is... Whatever, this is great. The first two that you've shown me are like, I'm happy.
Well, there was a discussion about Adopt a Highway, that there hasn't been a new Adopt a Highway application in so long. I was like, okay, well then why are we even funding this program? Should it be eliminated? Or is it...
So what are we funding in Adopt a Highway?
I think we're just putting money aside.
Money and people managing it and that type of thing. And so it's like, well, if you
know,
we're putting...
If somebody called us, we would
jump in.
Because we only do our county roads. We don't do the highways.
Right. But in a budget, we have money set aside for it. So why are we putting money set aside that's never being spent every year?
I think it gets swept.
That could go somewhere else. Maybe
you guys almost completely sold me on this whole program.
I bet you're not spending.
They're almost certainly spending it.
Yeah.
It's just being allocated somewhere else. Well, with all these different programs that we have, that money is being budgeted, but nothing's ever happening there. Maybe that pays for our building. You know?
Yep.
Big differences.
So when do we get to talk to these people about the questions that we have here? When do we get to talk to Emmy? When do we get to talk to Ray or Mike about these things?
Well, this is
just to note for the record that Doug
not
is totally bought in.
Not, no, I haven't. So, and again, then you still got to convert this stuff here into the line item budget stuff that we figured out.
Yeah, but if we know we have this during the budget time, say, oh, by the way, Ray, we're just you need to chop $89,000 out of your budget for graffiti removal. And not just move it somewhere else. It needs to go away into our slush fund.
Yeah, that'll be a big part of the next steps here is, you know, do you guys want to wait until we start talking about budgets and chunk up the budget time? Or is now a good time to keep the momentum going to say, hey, you said you want to eliminate this program. Get on the schedule. Come in and talk to the commissioners about it.
Yeah, so that table up there, if you go back to that slide, it has the list of the department owner and the recommendations. You could bring in the department and go through all of the recommendations, and that could be a way to, you know, essentially schedule that time and have that discussion sooner. I definitely would think you would want to have it sooner than the budget time because you want
to... Well, if we don't do it sooner, it's going to be worthless just like it's been. So.
Oh, no, but there's the opposite argument to that is you wait until budget time. Because if you have the conversation now, you say, we don't want you spending $90,000 on graffiti, they'll find another place to go and put that money.
Well, we need to understand it, though.
Maybe they're legitimate.
So I think one of the misnomers, I guess, the misunderstandings that's been out there, which I am now understanding better, I mean, not just now, but over the process of this, is we're not going to use PBB to build our budget. We're going to use PBB to have these types of conversations and ask our department heads to make changes in their budget requests as a result of these conversations.
Nicely put.
Correct? Okay.
It's budget analysis, not budget building.
Right. Yeah. And so just... Yes, it should happen well before budget time so that they can integrate that into their budget requests.
Yeah. And we talked a little bit, too, about how having these conversations now is going to be more beneficial to the department heads, too, because then they have time to talk to you about it. It's not in their budget discussion, and then you're asking questions, and they're going, oh, I don't even know where I'm going. That's going to take me 2 months. So, no, they don't get that FTE.
No, that's why they need to have...
They have this. They have the background. They have the time spent. They have the service level increase, you know. That's the thing.
And by now, they may even have come to their own realization that they shouldn't be doing this.
Mm-hmm. I will say the service level increase in looking at those, a lot of that is population-driven. You know, so the idea that service demand would increase, not necessarily that we want to just plus up all of our services. And so, you know, you'll see there the continual, you know, trends are showing a continual increase for the Child Protective Services.
So how does the outside funding get figured into all this stuff, too? We get 80-20 on this, who cares? You know, our only exposure is the 20%.
It should. There is an opportunity in here to all of our costs associated with the program and then any revenue offsetting those costs. So it should be in there if it's connected. It may not be.
Needs to be. I mean, there's a whole lot of difference of looking at an 80-20 program than it is looking at a 100% program.
I definitely agree, and you know that's part of the issue right now is just trying to, I think, to get better specificity. And this then ties back to the chart of accounts conversation around getting that detail put in to be able to better track those programs, you know, and have that project line. You know, I think this will help.
Sounds good.
A lot more information.
I'd also, I mean, I agree with you in part, Doug, that when it's 80-20, like maybe we think about it differently, but I think we want our department heads to think about it in similar ways in terms of efficiencies and how their department is operating.
No, I understand that too, and I don't disagree with that, but it's hard to compare an 80-20 program to something that we're funding 100%. So.
Absolutely.
And I just want to make sure we have a reflection there.
So you just made the comment about how this ties into the chart of accounts as if it's a desirable thing or a good thing, and it feels like it's almost essential.
I do think that, you know, you've got to have, I think to make this system work the way it should work, you've got to have a little more specificity in where we're pulling the costs to build these programs. Because if we're pulling the wrong costs.
Garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah, if we're pulling in the wrong costs and the wrong revenues, we're not.
Exactly.
Analysis, right?
It makes me worry that we might get too far out in front with chart of accounts, and then we bring PBB online, and now you're rebuilding the chart of accounts again.
So it shouldn't. It won't have any impact on that. Well, it should be. We should be mindful in building the chart of accounts that we want this level of detail, and that this reason to have the code in there. But I don't think it's going to change the way that you necessarily execute that.
Or if we need to add or remove, not accounts, what's the next step down?
Program?
Well, I'm talking about the chart of accounts.
Yeah, the most granular level is project.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, you will have a change in the projects, I think, in an ongoing
basis.
Which
we can do.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you want to be able to be more granular in order to do better analysis here. That's really. Yeah.
I would say also after reviewing the conversation about the budget timeline and the way in which we compare budget to actuals, that we're not doing that on an ongoing basis in real time. We're kind of just doing that, well, here's what happened last year. I mean, and I know we're kind of somewhere in between there, but it just stood out to me. And when we're talking about this, where there are opportunities for changes in the budget, that probably would be important too, that we're tracking that in real time.
And the nice things with the chart of accounts conversation, the nice thing is that once you've got that Excel form, you know, you're basically uploading Excel into this and it then populates. So there'll be a little bit of back end work in terms of reallocating all those things once we do a more granular chart. But it will improve the quality of data. You'll probably see a big change in allocations over that next year to year because it was using previous data, but it should get you to
at a certain point, two or three years down the road, it'll be more steady state.
And the what I guess I'm advocating is that you use this right now for more on the program. What it is, I suppose, like not the cost yet. I mean, we should have good costs and we should be able to tie those things, but I just don't feel 100% comfortable yet with that. And yet, I think we're still doing the work. You know, I think the department heads have scrubbed us enough times, or should have scrubbed us enough times, that we know what the work is we're doing. It's a question of why are we doing it? How are we doing it? Should we be, you know, thinking about some changes to it, whether it's population increase, you know, need, or whether it's, you know, why the heck do we still have this program?
The first two that you showed me were like, oh, what?
Right.
Somewhat convincing.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think you've seen this. This is just a piece of the blueprint, which is kind of the concept of in the beginning. Was the part of that first slide, you know, about how you, you know, if you have needs, how are you going to fund your needs? And as your needs change, you know, they're always changing, whether we like it or not, I think. And you know, the idea that we're never going to have or not going to have new needs is probably because we're not paying attention to the program at that time, honestly, because you know, our costs are going to change, their inputs and outputs are going to change. So the idea of PBB is that you're looking at those tools and essentially, you know, the next one, you're essentially thinking downstream how you free up the resources and how you can generate new revenue. And I think new revenue is certainly not preferable to freeing up and reallocating what you have, because new revenue is unpredictable and certainly problematic.
It's a way heavier lift, right?
It
I
is,
mean, to
yeah.
identify new revenue.
So hopefully at the end of this, you know, you're looking for the top corner of this, you know, rather than new fees and other taxes or anything like that at the bottom. You're looking at, you know, insourcing, at efficiencies, you know, at outsourcing as well, and service levels. You know, so there are ways to maybe look for partnerships, look for, you know, ways to skinny a program if need be. You know, just a lot of options out there, and I think that was the exercise that we tried to put department heads.
Looks like STARS figured out how to skinny up a little bit.
Boy, yeah, that kind of somebody blew up something over there. Did they hit a natural gas line or something? And everybody died.
So this is an example.
I have a little bit of insight on that. I won't talk about it while we're.
This is an example of say that ResourceX uses that they work with that they used it in the training that we had, and the idea that they have new needs at the $10.2 million, and so we're faced with how the heck are we going to fund that, and you know I think that's a pretty. Hopefully an extreme case in the sense of having such a big delta year to year over your budget. But, you know, the idea that, you know, you look for these, all of the avenues then, you're looking for a lot of different options and essentially just trying to figure out at the end of the day, how close can you get to that 10.2?
See, that's interesting. There's a chicken and egg thing there. I mean, there's a part of me that just thinks we just concentrate on the right-hand side and do whatever we can to free up stuff without having a goal of X number of dollars to free up.
I think the question is if you're in a situation where you have that choice, right? And so I think to your point, it's better for us to do this exercise before we're in that situation.
I think both are totally doable, possible scenarios. I guess, you know, if you're going to free up money, I think you already have identified a need. You know,
that's true. In terms of we have a slush fund we want to grow.
I'm just saying that on the record.
I'm not talking about human services.
That is not a capital improvements program.
Exactly. Yeah. So you want to fund the capital improvements program, and therefore, the more you can peel away from other programs, the better.
And so there is a difference between the top three and the bottom two, for sure.
Yeah.
And then it's all, and like you're saying, we're basing it on, you know, expanded services or population growth, whatever side you need to have that. So,
but that would be interesting. I mean, there, like I said, there's two ways to look at it. You could start out saying, you know what? We need to find $7 million over the next 3 years in order to build a human services building. Therefore, we're going to go on the right-hand side and make it happen.
Yep. And that idea.
Or we're just going to do the best we can on the right-hand side and hope for the best out here on the left.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I think what we've been doing is sort of that. We're
just
waiting for the best case scenario and not necessarily getting there. And the idea of if you use the levers, and especially...
We didn't know that accounting was taking our money at the next budget every year and rolling it into the surplus funds. And they just vanished.
But
we finally figured that out.
But I can certainly see the value of having a goal to work towards.
And I like the idea of what you said, a three-year concept, you know, so that if you are doing the future, every program is a future concept, and you're thinking about 3 to 5 years out, you're thinking about those headwinds before they get there and making some adjustments.
And you're not just waiting until you're literally out of office space before you try to figure out how to find
that's a great example.
On the other hand, having said that, is that CLEF being an example and the health insurance reserves being an example. We've gotten used to getting lucky year after year after year.
Yeah.
What happens when you're not?
Yeah.
You're unlucky.
Yeah, right? Well, and right. what would we have to do in that scenario?
Yeah, that's true.
How would we have to adjust?
Well, even on top of that, the bigger frustrating part is we budgeted conservatively.
Right.
And we didn't capture that conservative after it got it just
right.
rolled away.
Right.
So,
do we need to take a time out, Eric?
No, I'm just kind of curious to see what you guys were doing.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Join us. You can sit up here if it's easier to see.
So I just want to show you, you know, again, this is the back end from a super user standpoint. So there, you may not see as much when you log in, and we can refresh logins if you're not familiar with your password. But
can I just ask a question about that while you're here? When I go in there, it seems like all I can see is BCC programs.
Yep.
So is that right? Or am I supposed to be able to see everybody's programs?
I think you should. There's
you got to get off authorization.
Yeah, okay. There's a permissions thing, so I mean, we can give you.
That's my question: is should somebody fix that, because I can't do anything with it if all I can see is our programs?
Well, what you're supposed to have is something called view user permission, which I thought gave you oversight.
And maybe I just don't know how to do it.
I don't know if it's set up appropriately.
Okay,
Kendra, you can help us.
We can
individually get to where we want to go.
But essentially, the view user is like you can see, but you can't break it, right? You know, you can't manipulate
it. Yeah, don't let me break it.
So, you know, the idea that the department head owns their, you know, set, and then the super users see across the entirety of it. So when we're doing some of this, do you want to show the where we were doing the manipulation of the future, show the program list? So if you can sort by community or governance programs, you can sort by department, you can sort by org, which we aren't using really, you can sort by the program number, which really isn't terribly relevant yet. The program name you can sort, and you know, numbers go above letters. Descriptions should be in there enough for us to understand what services is being provided. And I think the program ID is the back end side for resource X. But this is generally the program inventory. You know, you've got an ability to add programs from search. So this is the idea of adding programs from other municipalities they work with and not necessarily have to recreate it. So that some of our programs had said city because they were a program that we pulled in from that, and we just change and edit the description. You can combine programs when you're a super user, so that's what we did when we went from 526 to 3, whatever, was just start to mash things together. Mm-hmm. In essence, though, I mean,
so let me interrupt you for a minute. Just looking at that top one there, that's really interesting, 4-H program management support, and you've combined a whole bunch of things, which makes perfect sense to me, into one program. Do we have the opportunity from here to drill down on that program?
Yeah, I think it's easier not from this.
Okay. That's fine. I don't care where. Presumably, we can get to the point where we can see the number of FTEs and the dollar cost.
Each one has essentially like a tile, you know, that kind of has that all that information and shows you generally what constitutes the program, and it should have that revenue piece. It should have all the costs and the FTE.
I mean, would it look in essence like the tile that we looked at for graffiti, or would it have more detail than that?
Much more detail.
Okay.
So this is the list of all the programs, and I want to not freak you out that these are the dollar amounts. It's not the amount that, you know, we're increasing services by $17 million. It just grabs the dollar amount associated with any program that was tagged for increase. It wasn't saying we should increase it by any specific amount. It was just, again, saying like there may be population increases, or there may be a need to change and increase the level of FTE or service that we provide.
So if I understood correctly, we sort of went past this slide, but the prompt was to think about the next three to five years, and what would you anticipate in terms of services?
Yeah. Like
okay.
Change, status quo, so, yeah, you can drill down, and this wheel here is where the department head can make proposed changes. So if they see a change, this pull down, they can change, and then they add a program node, so like how they might see that program changing. And then that gets added into the tile that we're talking about that has all the information about the actual cost, and then becomes the basis of discussion. You know, you see the cost as it is now. Why, department head, do you think this is increasing, decreasing, da-da-da-da-da, and then where do you see this going? And so that becomes...
There was the Adopt a Highway program.
I know. I noticed that the Adopt a Highway was under increase, even though...
No, it's a decrease. Those are
that's decrease.
Yes, this is all red is decrease. Green is... Perfect.
Is that a... Are those dollar amounts one-year dollar amounts?
This is the dollar amount that's in there right now for currently for that program.
On an annual basis.
Yeah. And that's the idea that it's just grabbing the program information. It's not giving any other information about the cost change to it. So, yeah.
So, in other words, that using the...
Stagnant for 5 years, no new adoptees.
So the idea was that could be...
So the Adopt-a-Highway program, the dollar amount decreased to $8,459, you could have a program that showed that decrease not as a result of completely eliminating it. You may have cut it from $24,000 down to $16,000, right, thus saving
$8,000. They haven't already done that, though. Yeah. These are just the ones they tagged for potential decrease in the future.
Correct. Could next year's.
Right.
But that decrease could not be a total elimination. It could just be a partial decrease.
Right. So you've got essentially a current allocation of FTE, which is the time spent. And then
how could we possibly be spending four people's time on a program that doesn't actually exist?
0.05.
No, I understand. Right? But like, why all four of them are even touching it in the first place? It's so crazy.
Well, and the idea of doing the tagging, too, the time you're supposed to spend at the minimum that you should do is 5%, of your actual time. And right. So the idea that you're spending a week or so on something versus just the occasional eyeball on it.
So the current allocation is man hours?
So this is the personnel cost.
No, but the 1.41, the 1 point, are those hours?
These are percentages of their actual time over the course of the year.
It's 1.41% of the admin force time for the year.
Yeah.
Got it.
So then it pulls your cost per salary for that person and then gives you program cost for that. And then here is the cost per materials and kind of an idea of what materials it is, posts and signs. And so literally it looks like what we do is essentially go out, somebody adopts a highway, we put the sign in and hang it. And
we're budgeting for that every year, even though we haven't done it in 5 years.
We're basically having.
So it brings up an interesting point. When does the actual spend get mixed back into budget? We're going to end up having 2 years worth of budgets in here. When does actuals come in, roll in?
In terms of...
When is 2020 going to be in here?
I'm guessing we probably can pull 20 in pretty soon.
2019.
We've got 19 and 18 already.
But so actuals. These numbers reflect the budgeted or the actuals?
That's the thing. I think that it always reflects budget.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to get to actuals until you've got your chart of accounts perfectly in alignment.
Well, that's where you tie it
with these programs.
I don't think it's ever meant to be a living thing of where you're showing the actual and the budget. It's priority-based budgeting, so it's really about the budget versus how you actuals it.
So
you need to have both.
So I think to Doug's point, something else that obviously needs to be done is to say, well, we've been budgeting this. Where is this money? Because we know we haven't been spending it on this program, right?
That's what I'm, So, somehow to tie, I understand what the budget thing's going to do. And so, but anyhow, somehow the budget needs to tie back into actual, too.
100%.
And however that does that, so.
Because I can't keep my mouth shut ever. There was something.
That's why we keep you around, Eric.
It was an aha moment. I felt like, for me last week, when I was told, this is not an accounting tool, it's a budget tool.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you can't ever get back to what reality is, you're just making fairy land.
But you use a different tool to get there. That's the point, yeah. I think.
You go to the other tool.
But it kind of leaves us in the position of having to ask the question every year, on this particular program, I see this is budgeted. Can you tell me how much money we actually spent on this? You've made the statement that we haven't spent any money on this for a number of years. How did you know that we didn't spend any money on this?
I just went based on what Public Works said in the meeting yesterday, last week. And so whether we did or didn't, we may have spent money on it, but it may not have been new money. So the question, it said stagnant, so there may have been, replacement of signs or something like that. I don't know. But
presumably our department directors will be able to find that information if we ask the question.
Well, that's exactly it. This is the tool to ask the question for you all and, the accountability, did you spend? We budgeted. Well,
and that's what I'm trying to get to.
Exactly. No, I get it.
We budgeted. Did you spend it there?
Exactly. Well, and I think that's part of the question is, you know, we budgeted.
How we do that.
But there's never going to be, just like Eric said, this is not an accounting program, so there's never going to be a clean, boom, this is what you budgeted, this is what you spent.
We'll but it does seem like, if I understand correctly, that if our chart of accounts, if we had that project level of detail, that would be easier than it is currently.
It's super easy to pull right. up a report or to
that matches,
and
yeah.
say, you know, well, it doesn't look like you spent this money. Or
right. Yeah. To do that comparison.
Okay. Good.
All right. So,
man, I've got this three of them now, right? Adopt a Highway, graffiti, and what was the other one? That caught my attention. Oh, GIS.
No, just pointing out
Tim's got a hit list.
Is on the service level decrease list. I didn't.
You didn't put it there.
I didn't.
Well, it's not so much a service level decrease as it is a.
So this is about maximizing the useful life and trading value and auction value. So I mean, it's not saying you shouldn't do it, you know, but it's how do we replace it? So that's another thing. It's the value of having a discussion about a process.
And these are suggestions from our department heads about where we could make changes.
Yep.
So we've been doing that.
Yeah, I think it's just a question, you know, are we at the right level maybe, or you know, have we maybe said mission accomplished on that discussion? But, yeah.
Or could it be more systematic, the way that we evaluate it?
Right.
Well, you can't use the same rules for a car as you use for a TD9, right. you know, bulldozer. So
these top three, I think the next one up to, I mean, these are the increases, and I just want to make sure that you don't go away thinking that it's increasing at $5 million or $2 million or whatever. I mean, these are the costs right now as they exist in PBB. These may not be accurate, but they're pulling in as many of the things that we think are roadway maintenance or communication program or whatever. And then it's just saying that there may be an increase. I think the communication program increase was, and actually these might be the same, frankly. But the idea that, you know, we're having an increase in population and visitation, and therefore, you know, people are probably going to need dispatcher. You know, there's going to be
more
an increase
often.
In our service. So just flagging that, you know, I think that they had talked before the budget about needing more dispatchers in the future. And maybe that's within the 3 to 5 year window, and that's a discussion. That's why it's fine.
Well, we built two extra workstations.
Exactly. So anyway, I mean that's what we did generally. I mean, this is obviously like
go back to the graph. So that communication program, the $1.9 million, that can't be a 1 year cost.
People and materials.
You don't think our communications department costs us $1.9 million a year?
No, I think he's
talking about the
increase.
No, that's exactly what Dan didn't want you to think.
Okay.
He said that explicitly. He did not want you to think that.
All right.
Good thing you asked that question, because now you know.
Thank you for the clarification.
Communication. And not dispatch. So this is actually, you know, assuming the three elected officials, the two managers, and two admins. So this is basically our entire BCC office doing communication program to a certain level.
This is like communicating to the public.
To the public, right.
Slate.
So there's 120-ish here, and then...
I'm spending 16% of my time communicating to the public.
But this also assumes BCC.
I'm not unreasonable.
Anyway, so this is the benefit. It's like, this may not be the accurate summation. I mean,
sure.
It's assuming every department's communication budget is pulled in here, and for some reason, the community board district is $1.1 million. I'm not sure what that is.
That seems wrong.
Right? So that, I mean, this is the benefit of going through these two.
Yep. Oh, sure.
The costs are not allocated properly in a lot of these, but...
You must have done some arbitrary allocation of our time, the 16% on communication. You probably just threw a number at it, right?
I think so.
I mean, there's no way you were checking our time cards.
Well, this isn't based on time cards at all. It's really based on the judgment you have.
Yeah.
You know, I think I spend 5% of my time or not.
Sure.
But, yeah. So it's a judgment call.
Yeah. And then presumably we can account for the other 84% of our time somewhere else.
Right. So, they, so this actually looks like it's all the various allocation programs in there. So
that, that looks like it includes all of the community services. I mean, that's all the HRC grants. So it's maybe not right, yeah.
Well, and it's, this one is thinking as, you know, a whole, as a program, so as a communication. So other departments are putting their time into communications.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing, too, like when you look at the payroll program. You'll see payroll,
how do you hold anybody accountable for it?
In the payroll.
Well, the benefit, you know, so payroll, the intent there was the idea, or AP, for instance, everybody does, well, not everybody, but department heads all do some level of AP or some level of payroll or whatever, and they spend that amount of time, but it's not like they have that program in their department. They are doing it on accounting's, you know, ownership, or you know, that department should drive that program.
So I have another question, because it would be useful, I think, for any individual. Going back to the screen you were just on, which showed that I spent 16% of my time on communications, do you have an easy way to show me how I spend the other 84% of my time? Because I think, you know, drawing it down to an individual level, I mean, obviously, for us, this is just wild guesses that were thrown in there, but I can see for other individuals, it would be a good tool for the for them to be able to analyze, hey, am I really using my time in the best way? Should I be spending 16% communicating? Maybe I should be spending 24% on that and less on something else.
Do you remember where that is?
You don't need to answer the question right now. Just knowing that we can.
Yes, there's a screen.
Would be interesting to follow up on.
Where it is.
Okay.
That shows the personnel and non-personnel.
I think you may need to go into. I think it's in the program. Expense and revenue.
It's under inventory.
No, I think that's all. Those are the building blocks. I think
you can definitely see it under cost allocation.
Yeah, it should. Are you talking about me?
I was you know what I was asking her? Was show me how I'm spending my time.
Yes.
Or ideally how I would be spending my time.
I don't know who's
who. I don't care if it's me or Beth.
I'm going to guess that you guys didn't allocate the three of us differently.
Yep.
Right.
So this is like the percentage that we estimated that you spend in the different departments.
Again, it probably isn't that informative for me as an elected official, but I can see where it would be really informative to any number of employees. Yeah.
So each department head went into this and did this for them and for all of their employees and said, okay, this employee spends this much time doing accounts payable, this much time.
I think that's super valuable to at least take a guess at it.
And then it's also helpful for them when they're saying, oh, you know, I need another FTE. It's like, okay, well, wait a second. What are your people spending their time on now that they shouldn't be?
So how many hours does it add up there then?
These are percentages of your all your time.
So it's based on a percentage of
Under allocation, those numbers should add up to 100, right?
Yeah. And we know that they do because of the 100 up here.
Yeah.
So when they're going through allocating,
You can essentially zero all of this out, reset it, and then we can evenly distribute your time across all the programs.
Sure.
We can, you know, essentially pick a few programs and evenly distribute a smaller number, you know, subset.
Yeah, I mean, we can easily quibble with these numbers, but
there's an option to include other programs. So if you have someone like Deanna does time for clerk and recorder for their minutes and things like that, so we allocated some of her time there that's not necessarily within the BCC department if she's doing things for other.
That's pretty awesome right there. I'm impressed with that, being able to bring that up. So theoretically, we could bring that up for any individual employee in the county.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's not how it's getting charged.
No, I understand.
But it's also a tool for some of the department heads to be able to look at and be like, wow, I'm spending 75% of my time on doing AP processing.
Yeah.
I've got to change what's going on.
Yeah.
We've got to do this differently. So it was sparking a lot of conversations in that regard, too, once they had to sit down and actually say, what are they spending their time on? And then when they look at that, man, I don't need to be doing that. That's a program that we don't even need because the city does that. Maybe I can get rid of that and spend my time on something else.
So it looks like you spend about 50% of your time on BCC agenda management and county operations oversight and management.
Mm-hmm. like I said, I'm not here to quibble with how it's been allocated. I'm just fascinated that you can bring it up like that and kind of change it around. That's great. It's awesome.
Well, I have to assume that there's some work to be done. I mean, you've indicated that there's some work to be done, but also just on how these, for a communications function, how these programs are named, too, because I have to assume that the agenda management is actually spending time in regular BCC meetings as well.
It may be now because we had consolidated programs. We probably do need to retitle them.
Yeah.
But I think we had one about agenda development, one about the meetings, and one about, I forget, there was a third one, but yeah.
I'm just assuming that's what I assumed, is that you combined it in that way. And so then
I think pretty much countywide, now that we've done a lot of the combining, we need to go back in. We need to change the definitions so that the definitions include other programs that were rolled up into the head program that they chose.
Right.
And then maybe
Well, we have a lot of programs here. How many, scroll down, how many more am I not seeing?
Not many.
Not too many.
A couple.
Oh, okay.
You got 1% of your time on recruitment.
It's about to come up.
But so that's a program that many departments would share, or is that just
that
program can exist all across the county?
Okay. Yeah, the idea like training, recruitment, you know, thinking about supplies is a line item in our budget, but you know how we allocate supplies to things. I mean, there's things that don't necessarily need to be you know, across multiple departments. You shouldn't have you know, the example of the AP, you know, you shouldn't have an AP in your office at someone else's office. You know, there shouldn't be 20 AP programs.
So should something like recruitment be under HR then?
It is.
Okay.
It's just a program that you're putting time towards recruitment.
Yeah, but sure.
So
that could also exist in any department.
Yep.
Right. So it's one program called recruitment that HR owns, but lots of people will put their time into it.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
And so, you know, all the trainings, there's things that I think there was sheriff's head training, comm, you know, all normal things you would think. Everybody has some level of training and trying to consolidate that in one area.
Armory.
I'm not sure how many others have armory.
We want
that
an armory.
Training.
Can we get an armory?
Yeah.
This is where my time went when I was being humiliated at the sheriff's office with the live shooting.
Yeah,
drill.
I did that too. Yeah. I think it was.
We should have a program for humiliation.
Public shaming? Isn't that what we do every day?
So, this is just an example of the back end, but in essence, the plan, which I think we did relatively well, was the day and a half of, you know, clean up the inventory and make sure we're all speaking the same language about programs and what is a program, making sure that we had better costing, maybe not perfect, but better costing for those programs, and then that we had a future plan for each one.
So you feel like, at least in the near term, we're done with consolidation of programs, so we're down to the new number that we're really going to be working with for the foreseeable future?
I mean, I think there's probably some room on both ends of it to consolidate more in some of those departments that hadn't yet been able to do it, and then to probably open it back up a little bit, you know, not the floodgates again to 500.
But we're in the neighborhood.
In
right
the
now.
Neighborhood, yeah. I'd say about 350 would be a good number for us just as a now time, and it may expand in the future. But and then, you know, I think your point, it's really a question of how often are we going to use it? Is it immediate? Is it, you know, ongoing? Is it just a budget? And, you know, I think it really should be more ongoing discussion.
Well, we still need to have some face time with department heads going through what they have after they've got it figured out and can explain their mumbo jumbo or whatever it might be.
That's only the legal department.
I know that's
mumbo jumbo.
The legal department. But anyhow, just making sure they can understand and explain it to themselves, and then we need to have them come in and explain their programs to us. I'm fine. That wasn't me. That wasn't somebody else's dumping stuff in my department.
No, but it's a much better way to have a conversation with the department directors than looking at their budget.
No, I understand. Yeah. I'm fine. I'm going to see.
That's an interesting thing you just said about dumping. What do you mean by that?
Because recruitment, we just talked about recruitment.
Right.
It's in the HR budget, but everybody across the board probably does a little bit of recruitment, then it all gets dumped into
not because if I'm spending 4% of my time as a commissioner on recruiting, it's in our budget.
Right. So this isn't the budget. This is a program. So this is analysis.
It actually does a better job of showing
so
that.
Still, so, but it's still going into
money out of your. We still have a line item for recruitment in BCC in our budget.
And
everybody else does too. But as a program, this is how much time and money as a program for recruitment that we're spending.
As a whole county organization.
So the conversation might be rather than...
Yeah, so again, I'm struggling with the value of that. So.
Well, it's do you necessarily go line item by line item in the various departmental budgets, or do you think, well, where are we with our knowledge, right? And we want to have more, better trained staff, whatever that looks like, or when we're doing recruitment, why are we, how do we do recruitment, or, you know, any of those kinds of big programs.
Yeah, you can pick something else. I'm not necessarily.
Well, recruitment's a good one. Let's just say we find out we're spending $800,000 a year on recruitment.
Between staff time and other resources.
Yeah, if we've actually allocated everything to that, it's like, really? I mean, does
and
that make sense?
Is there an opportunity to consolidate and become
know
more efficient?
Why there's all that turmoil.
Yeah, why are we spending that much money?
Maybe we're doing it inefficiently, or both, right?
Yeah. So it's the how much, then it drives the how, and, you know, then maybe some change. And, yeah, getting to the point where all those individual line items still exist. We're not changing the budget, because that's the thing. We're not building the budget in this, right? We're just talking about the budget.
Programs.
And so, you know, it hasn't changed where the money is. It just kind of puts it in a different frame when we're talking about it, so that you can talk about recruitment that way, or even talk about...
Sure, because you could go look at the HR budget, and it might show they're spending $300,000 on recruiting, but it's only telling a small part of the story, because the rest of us are doing it out there in different places.
I mean,
it's more like the how and why.
Yeah.
So you can talk about the how and why, and then go talk about your budget, or you can be looking at the budget and going, wait a second, what is up with this?
So are you still going to be able to identify the how and why of recruitment when 17 people are putting their information in it?
I think you can, because you can drill down what we showed you.
Find out where it's coming from.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, whose time are we talking about?
Okay.
You know, what other materials go into it? You know,
yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, it's that question of why, you know, for each one of those steps.
Seems like a good opportunity to ask questions, right?
Yeah.
Because if there are places that there's people allocating their time, I mean, just because we're using recruitment as an example, I don't know if that's the best one, but we could say, why the heck is this person spending time on recruitment? What does that mean? Why did you allocate your time to that?
Yeah, why are four people in the building department recruiting?
Right, what is that? Yeah, so what does that mean or look like? And then you can see the places that there might be changes.
It's always good. I mean, these are always estimates. People are estimating how they're spending time.
Right. And then the benefit of right now figuring out what it is that we're doing, and then hopefully with that chart of accounts change, you're getting better financial information, then you have a really good conversation, you know, between the why are we doing it and how, and then what's it costing us, and then making some changes to that cost. I just, you know, with what we just showed you on that communication one, you know, that's unfortunately, like, several of these programs, I don't think it's all of them, but there are a lot that just have misallocated costs in them right now. So just making a decision based on the cost of it right now.
I mean, some of those ones like that could be easily a big collecting point of that.
Yeah. So I think that's part of the ongoing use too, is making sure we're looking at the numbers as well. But
I knew this made all would make sense. I just need to
I'm still not convinced, Tim. So if you could show me, you know, we're going to cut a few more programs, like, adopt the highway sign program or something, I'm fine, you know, or we're using to figure out how we're going to increase services in somewhere. You know, figure out how that does, but then we have to pull it back down into actual budget line items as well.
To me, it feels more elemental than that. It just feels like a place to have a rational discussion with a department director about what they're doing and how they're going about doing it without even translating it into dollars.
So it goes back, and you just said exactly what I've been saying. We need to spend some face time with our department heads after they got figured out in their mind what they have.
With them having this screen up
exactly,
there, and then running it.
What do you see? I'd like to hear what they have to see about what they see as an issue first.
Right.
And before we even open, I mean, hell, I don't even know enough to even know what an issue I might see in something because I don't, I'm not reading this Greek yet, so.
Well, I think part of, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, if someone is requesting a new FTE and they say, well, you know, I need another admin, my admins are way too busy. Okay, what are your admins spending their time on? And we'll pull up just like what was
that individual.
This is exactly what they're spending their time on. This, you know, 50% answering the phone. I need a receptionist. That's how we can kind of dial in and say, well, what are they doing? What do they need to be doing? Do you really need the FTE? Maybe you don't. Maybe we need to reallocate.
We'll get an intern.
Maybe we can get a, you know, no. Maybe we can get an automated
Eric says
phone
no.
system and eliminate that time. It's hard
so
to
presumably one. Presumably, people do, there must be a place that's just called General where a lot of people just stash a lot of their time. Or, nope.
No, you've got to assign it.
It's got to be a real place.
It's got to be to a program, yeah. Okay. And we did a lot of eliminating, a lot of people had tasks as programs. Well, you know, they're not answering the phone. They're answering questions about what's on the agenda. So that's an agenda management. They're asking questions about land conservation. So that time goes into PDR.
So if we look at the admin for the road and bridge department, how would that individual's time be broken up?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to do.
Responding to complaints,
yeah.
80%.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and I think to the point about the department heads, I mean, part of where we, I think, needed to go around this is we really want you to invest in trying to make this work and seeing what it looks like and spend the time on it. And then we really are pushing and asking department heads to be the expert in the programs that they're providing and to be the expert in what their departments are doing and then to really analyze those and be innovative in thinking about how they might do it better or differently.
So if everybody's input their information, we've already got these programs, I mean, could we bring a department director up here tomorrow and run through their program and look at their individuals?
Probably, yeah. I mean, I think you want to make it a safe environment, right? I mean, honestly, I think
right.
that a lot
let's
of
try it out. I'll be your guinea pig. Yeah.
So we can make it safe both ways.
That's
don't
true.
Ask for any more. And when we're not going to talk about cutting right now either.
Right. But I think that's that is fundamental. I think
right.
a lot of people are looking at this going, man, you're just looking to cut my budget. So
right.
I'm not really sure.
Yeah. No, I get that. I love his suggestion because he's got a really simple program. He doesn't have any feelings. He'd be a program.
But I think to Dan's point, I mean, it's a lot about how we lay it out there. And so what is this conversation about and what is the end result of it going to be? And what are we going to ask you as the department head to do after that conversation's over? And it needs to be a good place and a safe place for people to have a conversation.
Well, we need – I need to be comfortable with it. Otherwise, it's a waste of those guys' time. It puts
yeah.
so much in on
no
it.
No question. Well, and I think Tim's point is a perfect one. Like, hey, we need X amount of dollars freed up so that we can build a human services building. And we need everybody to tell us how much money they can come up with so that we can figure this out, right?
It's not a very safe place.
No, it's not. But I mean, in terms of, like, what are we trying to accomplish?
Oh,
I think that's a perfect concrete example of what
we're
trying to accomplish.
Rather than just saying we're cutting for the sake of cutting. Or
yeah, exactly. I mean, or to Dan's point about, I mean, he put up that really scary example of we need $11 million before next year, but like we can anticipate these service increases are going to be required in the future. How are we going to plan for those?
Yeah.
And that needs to be a collective and collaborative effort to make that happen, right?
I think that's where you're coming from, if I understood it, that, you know, it's a department head should be telling you what they see coming forward, and they should be the experts in providing that.
That's what I was saying, yeah. I'm not, you know,
right.
I mean, we need to be the judge and jury
exactly.
of
right.
that,
right.
but they need to make their case.
Yeah.
So would you guys be interested in scheduling a half an hour, 45 like, minutes of Eric's talk on the agenda just to run through it as a what if? You know?
Yeah, I don't
agree
know
with
that.
I guess I would ask Kendra and whoever you are, Dan, to suggest what they think the next steps on this are. But I think that's a great thing to do is just use an example.
I mean, I think that is the next step is you know, you've got to use the system. And, you know, what we talked about before, you know, we wanted to get the system to the point we felt comfortable using it. And I think most people are or getting there. And I think the more familiar, the more often we use it, the more familiar it is, the more familiar, the more comfort we have with potential change or you know, just that it's useful information.
Well, we either need move, make a decision to stay on it, or when, like I say, we're already committed.
Yep.
We need to make the good faith effort. I'm in on that.
Yep.
Make good faith effort to take a look at it. Otherwise, and we figure out whether we're going to save it, use it, or not, or we're done with it.
Yep.
I agree.
And that was the intent, right?
Yep.
It was just, let's give it the college try. Here's
and again, we got a lot of money invested in it right now, too. So I'm thinking we need to recognize that, too. I recognize that.
Well, and so it seems like the concept of just, again, laying the framework so that it is a good, we're all trying this. It's, you know, it's new. We're not throwing anybody under the bus or putting anybody on the spot, but we want to try using it. We want to have department heads come in, talk us through what their ahas were as they did this and what they think they can do, and then think about opportunities for integrating that into their budget development.
My guess is that when they present, they're going to see things, oh gosh, I've got that wrong. And we're going to ask a question, that's not right. And they'll go back and fix it.
Yeah.
And that's not anything they should be threatened about if they made a mistake.
Yeah. You know,
we've already determined that we're not spending $90,000 on graffiti removal, right?
Yeah. And that's part of our not immediate anymore. Next step is we've asked the department heads by February 7th to go back through, look at your definitions, look at your program titles, look at your costing, because a lot of people, when we were doing this, realized, ooh, I don't have all green, I've got some reds, I haven't allocated all of my revenue, I've got one staff member where I only allocated 5 minutes of their time to AR, and I haven't done the rest of their time.
Sure, they're
so
not 100%.
Go in and get that cleaned up so that, you know, some people added programs. Well, now those programs have to go through the steps of scoring and peer review, because when we really got into what is a program, they realized they had left out two things that are funded by grants that they're required to do that need to get put in there.
And by the way, when you add a program, you got to take it out of somewhere else.
Yep, exactly.
Because you have to reallocate everything.
Yep, time and budget. Yep. So there's a lot of cleanup that needs to happen now that came as a result of us going through everything in detail the last couple days.
So is it a good idea to think about, though, scheduling, maybe not everyone, but maybe a few department heads just to come in and have a conversation, and they do the cleanup in preparation for that, you know, that they're preparing what they're going to share with us, and they go through what's in there and come in and do it.
Yeah, to your point,
and maybe
they're not
just
going to
take
be motivated
some volunteers.
To do it unless they know they need to show us.
Well, and why? Why would you be? Yeah. I mean, why would you spend the time to sit down and
if
do this if there's no
product? Yeah, it's up to us to show some interest in this,
right.
And actually care about what you're doing. And someone's going to need to explain that graffiti budget to me.
So I guess, I mean, does it make sense to just take a few volunteers? Like, I mean, we have Eric, but just ask if there's anyone else who wants to kind of be the guinea pig to start this out.
Why don't you just run through one and see what that
Yeah, I think that's
yeah.
a good idea, too.
That's
but
a great idea.
Develop a list of questions that might refer to everybody else.
And you can go out and brag about what you did.
Definitely not. Because I had a lot of questions and issues and a couple of things, two things I guess I would add. You're probably going to hear, if you haven't already, some department heads grumbling about this whole program. And, I get it. I was probably a grumbler. We lost touch of this program. You know, we haven't done anything significant for a year, and then suddenly we're thrown back into these trainings, and there were some people put off by that, and I think it's on us, the department heads, to embrace this and be told, embrace it, because it's we've invested in it. We find it's a good tool if we use it and stay in touch with it. So get used to it, and we'll all suck it up and do it. After having run through it and understanding it better, I'm picking up on the value of it, and I'm not 100% sold on it, but I'm certainly seeing some value. But key thing is I got it. Use it and stay in touch with the program.
Well, you'll department directors will use it if they know that they're going to have to come and present to us and validate.
It's us demonstrating that, you know, this isn't just Dan running out Renegade doing whatever he wants and we're not privy to it, right? I mean, that this is, that we want to use this as a tool, and at the very least, we want to make a commitment to trying it, and we have to make a good faith effort around that before we decide, you know what, this actually isn't going to be useful.
Yeah, can you imagine if we just
term.
Said today, oh, well, screw it, without actually giving it a chance?
One thing I'll be able to show you, because I had to put a lot of thought into it, is that I own 8 programs, and I use that word because it made sense to me. So those are my programs that I have ownership of. But I do other work outside of my own programs. That program is owned by somebody else.
Yep, right? We got all
right.
That.
So
yep.
I go into their program to add my cost.
You have 8 programs that are exclusive to you?
No.
Oh, you just all other people may be a part of those programs, but you're the owner of those 8.
Right. So I mean, you can run through it. The guy last week, Chris, he made a note to fix my revenue. There's a bail grant somehow entered in there, and which isn't our department. That's the DA's office. So I think there was a confusion when that got entered. So see my revenue is in red. Mm-hmm.
So back to the timing again. So I don't, you know, and again, after the meeting Thursday and Friday last week and whatever, but let's not lose the momentum for a year, and that'll piss everybody off even worse, just like Eric said. And at that point in time, we would bail on the whole damn thing anyhow. So we need to, while we're fresh, we need to keep moving a little bit at least, so that we have the basics to make a decision about how we feel about it. So
are we going to try to put him on the agenda in a couple of weeks or whatever? We'll talk about that tomorrow afternoon. Well, it will be a
Monday.
Today
we're talking about our agenda, aren't we?
It was actually canceled. I have a board member training
at 3:45.
Community foundation that I'm waiting for.
Okay.
I saw that your computer showed us you were leaving.
Yeah, we
saw that.
But tomorrow we're going to have our agenda review. We can determine.
Well, I'll have to talk with Eric and
see when he's available.
When he's available.
But we can talk about that tomorrow.
Calendar.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
I like that.
I do too. Thank you guys for
Thanks.
Your work on this.
Yep.
I saw Chris in the hallway. It's funny, every time I walked by him, he acted like he knew who I was and was like, hi. And then finally I just said, I introduced myself, and he was like, oh, thanks for telling me who you are. Okay. Yeah.
So are we done then, since we don't have a gender review then, or what?
I don't know. Mr. Chairman, what else is on our agenda here?
Wasn't there something about
legislative update?
Yeah, but Kendra,
we kind of did that. And we kind of did that.
Yeah,
right. I think we're done.
Great.
There was one more that you had asked me about.
Legislation.
Right.
Legal off-duty activities or something.
It's
called.
How high can you be when you come to work?
Well, Eric says it's very problematic for employers.
Yeah, it's troublesome. So there was a case. Was it Netflix? It was some media company that got sued by a former employee. He got fired because he tested positive for marijuana in Colorado. And he sued them because there's a state statute out there that says if it's you have a protected interest in doing what's constitutionally allowed under Colorado law, and can't be punished for doing something that's lawful. Okay? And so he's saying, his argument was, it's lawful in Colorado for me to use marijuana, so you can't fire me for using marijuana. And the court said, and this was a court of appeals case, they said, yes, they can fire you because it's not lawful under federal law. So this legislation aims to undo that court decision and say, we don't care about federal law. If it's lawful in Colorado, an employer can't fire you for engaging in that lawful activity. And so, in my mind, that would be enormously problematic for the county because there are no, just sticking with marijuana, I mean, think of all the other lawful activities or unlawful that we think are unsavory. We want to still be able to fire them for that, even though it's a lawful activity. Sticking with marijuana, there are no black and white testing capabilities for marijuana.
To demonstrate impairment.
I can use marijuana on a weekend, 30 days later, test positive for it when I have an accident on the side of the road, and nobody knows if it was related or not. So
So that was going to be the technical question I had. Isn't there a threshold of blood content for cannabis that the state patrol can use as evidence that you are impaired?
Yes and no. I mean, there are nanograms per whatever that show up in a report, assuming they have a blood test and requires a blood test. And then it's still subjective. If I have, well, even alcohol is subjective, right? If I drink 3 beers, that's going to affect me much different than it does Beth.
So when they do the blood test 30 days later, obviously your nanograms per liter of blood there must be a black and white threshold.
No, that there was an attempt to categorize marijuana for DUI purposes and saying that if you are over this certain level, then you are per se guilty.
The same as the blood BAC.
Exactly. And that never.
So the one for employment purposes, if there's even just a trace, it's enough to say for employment purposes, when they test people for employment, basically you have to be at zero. That's the black and white threshold.
If you have a zero tolerance policy and you intend to not employ people that use whatever substance you're...
What's our policy when we have testing done for road and bridge employees? It'd be a zero.
Yeah, but we don't test people that way. Think of it in the broader concept. Don't get hung up on the testing of marijuana or any other drug. It's this lawful activity notion, and that this bill would protect people who are engaging in law activity that may be lawful in Colorado, but even if it's not lawful under the federal code.
So I guess, you know, again, you don't want me to get hung up on the testing, but I guess the distinction I see, if an individual is, let's say, and this has happened, I think maybe in our school district, I think we had a teacher that was observed at a party smoking marijuana in their private time. And, you know, my feeling on that is that, well, as long as when they come to school and they're not under the influence of that drug and they're able to perform their duties, what they're doing on their own time is really their own business.
And we have a performance policy where drugs are concerned, so we don't ask, don't tell kind of a thing, but drivers, CDOT drivers, or they're not CDOT,
CDL.
Drivers are required to be tested.
Correct.
Under federal law. And so could this presumably undermine the ability for Brown County to fire somebody that tested positive for cannabis? Mm.
That had a CDL, that their CDL license was required.
Yeah.
Or really in any circumstance, right? I mean, if you suspect it. So that was the crux of the discussion. I mean, you're saying don't think about the testing, but I think that's the obvious thing. Because to Tim's point, if some guy has a beer on the weekend, I don't think it's our place to say, well, you can't have a beer on the weekend. It's you can't have a beer and then come to work. I mean, that's the point. And the problem with marijuana is that the way the scientific and the test, the medical kind of limitations on the way you test for it, right? Like, because if I used marijuana on the weekend, I may still have it in my system a week later, and you wouldn't argue that I'm still impaired. And so how do I demonstrate when someone truly is impaired versus when they're not, because of the medical issue that you're the testing.
In a perfect world, we'd have an MAC, marijuana or whatever, marijuana
right.
content. You are impaired. You should not be driving, and you need to, you know, you're messed up. And then there ought to be something in between zero and that's an acceptable level. While you're on
but
the job.
Limitations are that
we don't
know that because people's.
We could the legislature could establish it.
I think there's a medical
Frito bag test, wasn't it? Frito bag test.
Think about this. Okay, you have two operators of some heavy machinery doing a project together, and one of them injures the other one severely. Okay, and there's a question about are you sober or not sober or whatever else, are you really trained and everything. But the employer wants to protect itself and say, if you test positive for something, for marijuana in this case, you're going to be terminated because we are liable ultimately for your acts. Well, there is no test available to say, yeah, he was impaired or not impaired while operating that heavy machinery. We have to rely on our ability to have a zero-tolerance policy and say, nope, you're out of here because we can't absorb your liability, even though what you're doing is lawful under Colorado law on your own time.
And what this legislation would open the door for is for that guy to say, no, I was using marijuana 4 days ago. I'm not. You can't discriminate against me or whatever.
All they have to say is it's lawful under Colorado law. Right. Even though it's not lawful under federal law.
And I wasn't doing it while I was at work. I was doing it when I was not at work. Right? It doesn't say anything about them being able to do illegal things while at work.
But this legislation doesn't touch that at all.
Right.
All it's focused on is this lawful activity.
I agree. It's bad, and we should oppose it. I've got no problem with that. But it seems
like
the solution
better
would
get
be
after it, yeah.
simple enough if the legislature would establish arbitrary numbers for what level is acceptable.
I think the problem is that it varies so widely, and it varies differently than alcohol impairment might. I mean, I think that medically we have a way to say at this level in blood alcohol content. So Eric's point about the three beers, that's actually the wrong point, because if I drink three beers, my BAC is going to be much higher than if
you drink three beers. Yeah, but we can measure
your BAC. Right? No, but that's my point, is that there is a... That's the measure, is the BAC.
But you're a bad example. But if, say... Okay, I'm going to slow down. If I drink three beers and he drinks three beers, I'm likely to have a little less content because of my size.
Right.
But I'm also probably going to be more impaired because he has more tolerance.
Right.
And I don't drink beer.
Right.
And so...
But that's more of the equivalent in the case of marijuana that we're talking about.
And so you just pointed out that the BAC measure is on a certain level is arbitrary. And I'm just saying, why can't we do something arbitrary with marijuana?
And they have, so I was wrong. I know that for a short time, the attempts to engage in that by the legislature was didn't pass. But apparently they have passed it now, so it's 5 nanograms is where you're per se DUID.
Great. So if you come to work and you're only 2 nanograms, fine.
We want to be able to say fired as the employer.
Because
we care. We don't want liability. If it happens again, that catastrophic injury of the heavy machinery, the plaintiff's going to say, Kelly, you knew this guy does marijuana. In fact, you knew that he injured somebody on the job previously.
I'm going to say that the legislature said it was okay at 2 nanograms. That's my defense.
That's not going to get you out of the lawsuit. And that's as to DUID.
So that's 1089, by the way, and the CCI opposing that.
For this reason. I mean, that's.
Well, I don't know if we have that much of a scholarly talk about it. But.
Any measure that protects employees, we should be pro for. Any measure that protects employees, we should be down for.
What pisses me off about that, you can't tell me that a guy that got drunk the night before, he'll come in the next day and he's hungover and he's out of it. But he's not testing positive.
I won't tell you that. I think that is a problem.
Yeah. Why would we treat these two things so differently?
You're being way more philosophical. This is very easy. This is legislation that's in front of us that will upend a decision that was favorable to employers.
Yeah, give up your ideology and just follow the total line.
Whatever.
I'm not giving. We're ideological around here, Tom, and you won't tell us not to be.
I don't know why I get hung up on fairness. It always complicates the situation.
Well, Eric doesn't like it, so.
Fairness sucks. I get it.